Welcome, boys and girls, to another edition of Blitzcast. This is Blitzcast number 34. It's the Halloween edition. We're recording on October 31st. Obviously, you'll get to hear the show after Halloween. We've got, again, a lot of topics to run through, and one of our favorite topics has always been talking about the Browns, you know, and when this team will eventually improve and make the playoffs. You know, they've got a great fan base out there, and that fan base has suffered quite a bit over, you know, the last 25 years, I would say. And you know what? Browns decided to let go of their head coach again and their offensive coordinator and kind of re-energize, I guess, what's going on inside that building. Hugh Jackson is gone. Haley is gone. Ed, did you expect this? I mean, you were on the Browns bandwagon a little bit, saying that this team will improve. Obviously, they've lost, what, three straight games, and they've kind of taken a step back recently. We haven't seen Baker Mayfield get better, and, you know, we heard behind the scenes that there was a feud brewing between Hugh Jackson and Haley, and the owners decided to clean house altogether.
Yeah, I think there was definitely like the one aspect of it where, you know, Haley and Hugh Jackson were just not getting along. And I think, you know, they wanted to just kind of clean house on that aspect. But I think another straw that broke the camel's back was just the fact that they hadn't won a road game in like 3 years. And, you know, this team losing three in a row and just not being able to win on the road in his career. And Hugh Jackson had a 1-31 record as a head coach. I mean, at some point you have to say enough is enough. I was actually on the bandwagon of, you know what, let's see what Hugh Jackson can do. Let him draft Baker Mayfield. And it hasn't gotten better. And I'm usually not for firing coaches, but this was a situation where they had to do it.
Shouldn't they have done this last off season? I mean, when John Dorsey took over as the GM, I mean, you mentioned that Hugh Jackson was 1-15 in 2016. He was 0-16 in 2017. I mean, they should have cleaned house. I mean, to have that type of record, they should have gotten rid of Hugh Jackson before this season even started.
Yeah, you know, I'm always in favor of giving coaches a couple of years to just, you know, be able to build the team that they want and, you know, being able to get their players and, you know, then kind of implement their strategy. But, you know, now that they've had two drafts where they were picking first, they've had a lot of picks over the years. They've got a lot of talent on the roster, and so, you know, when you got the talent on the roster, it just kind of points to Hugh Jackson just isn't doing the job.
Well, Hugh Jackson and the Browns front office before, they passed on Carson Wentz. You know, they passed on Deshaun Watson. They finally got their quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and that was obviously John Dorsey. He decided to finally put his foot down and say that we need to get a quarterback, and they obviously got the one that they wanted. What I don't understand, Ed, obviously I don't understand Hugh Jackson coming back this year, but I also don't understand how you get Haley as the offensive coordinator here. Look, Hugh Jackson is a strong personality. He's a former offensive coordinator. Haley is a strong personality. You know this. I mean, in terms of he was the offensive coordinator with the Steelers for a while. Before that, he was a Kansas City head coach. He's a guy that's never gonna let's say this. He's never been the cordial offensive coordinator that listens to his head coaches. I mean, he's always marching to his own tune. He's got a big head on his shoulders. He thinks he knows everything. So to me, this relationship, it was never going to work. I mean, when you have two personalities like this in the room.
Yeah, you know, I really think that was the reason why Pittsburgh let go of Todd Haley. I mean, Randy Feitner's done a pretty decent job in Pittsburgh, but you know, I think it's just the personality. I mean, there were stories in Pittsburgh about how he was, you know, at the Tequila Cowboy and getting in arguments with fans, and you know, this happened a couple times, and I think that was why he was let go. But I mean, I think you know, as far as being a coach, I think he's a good coach. I just think he's just a strong personality, and you could even see it in the Hard Knocks, you know, that one wanted to do things one way, and Hugh Jackson wanted to do things the other way. And I think what really the downfall of Hugh Jackson is that he just didn't have that dominating personality, in that I didn't think he like commanded respect in the way that, and I think that kind of gave Todd Haley leeway to say, hey, I have to kind of take some of the reins here. You know, Hugh Jackson did a great job in Cincinnati as an offensive coordinator. I think he can still have a good career as an offensive coordinator, but he just didn't have the leadership to be a head coach in the NFL.
Where do they go from here, Ed? Give me – obviously, Greg Williams takes over as the interim head coach, the defensive coordinator there. He's had success as the defensive coordinator in the league at some other stops out there. He's got a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Do you think he has a legitimate shot to get this job once we'll hear some other candidates come January?
To get the job.
Yeah, do you think he's a legitimate guy that might get the job? What do you think? I mean, is he going to be in the running? What does he have to do? Does he have to get a winning record with this Cleveland Browns team right now in order to prove that he can be the head man for the job?
The thing is about Greg Williams is, I think what the mistake was is they brought in all these strong personalities, and well, they brought in strong personalities from their defensive coordinators, and then they brought kind of a weaker head coach. I just Greg Williams is just, he's just kind of rogue in the way his personality is. I mean, you know, you kind of like it as a fan, but I don't know if that's the exact leadership approach that you're looking for in a head coach. I would personally like to see them look outside the organization, add a guy. I mean, the two names that I have are Wisenhunt and Vic Fangio.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I'd like to talk about those two names, what you think about those guys. But those are if I'm the Cleveland Browns, those are the two names that I really want to interview and see who the best man is.
It's interesting. Interesting names. Wisenhunt was a former offensive coordinator of the Steelers. He led the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl in 2008. He's been a head coach at a couple of stops, obviously with the Arizona Cardinals and with the Tennessee Titans. I don't know. I don't know if he would do it a third time here. Wisenhunt is a smart coach. He's a really good offensive coordinator. Even though he led the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl, I was never sold on him as the head man. He also is a strong personality, so I'm not sure. Obviously, you would bring in an offensive coach in order to develop Baker Mayfield, right? I mean, that's the thought process here. Right. I mean, Ken Wisenhunt has had success with quarterbacks in the past, and you hope that he's going to do wonders for Baker. I actually am more in favor of a defensive coach. Vic Fangio, you and I talked about this a little bit. He's never been a head coach before. He's already in his 60s. He's been with the 49ers. He's doing really good things with the Chicago Bears. I'm actually more in terms of hiring a good offensive coordinator, but I am more in favor of hiring a defensive guy as the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, the problem in Cleveland has been offense. It hasn't been defense. But I think the benefit is that, you know, defense is the way of the AFC North. And so I could just really see, you know, a defensive guy like Fangio succeeding in the AFC North, just with a lot of defensive powerhouses. I mean, the Steelers haven't been as good, but you know, these are teams that pride themselves on their defense. Whether they've been good is another question.
I would actually look at a couple other names out here. I would look at Jim Schwartz, who has been head coach with the Detroit Lions before. He's the defensive coordinator right now of the Philadelphia Eagles. I think Jim Schwartz is a really solid name. I think he deserves another shot. And another guy that I would look at is John Harbaugh, because I think Harbaugh's time with the Ravens, it's coming to an end. He's had a great run. He's been a good head coach, and yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, he might switch, you know, the Ravens for the Cleveland Browns. I think Harbaugh could be a solid addition here. He knows the AFC North. He stays in the same division. It's a possibility. And also another name, watch out. I mean, if the Packers don't get on a roll here, I think Mike McCarthy might be let go. If this Packers team misses the playoffs, with the new GM there in place, I think the Packers might be looking elsewhere. And you know the connection here with the Green Bay Packers. It's solid with the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, John Dorsey used to work for the Packers for a long, long time. So I think Mike McCarthy would be the top name if he's let go.
Well, I think Mike McCarthy is a good coach, and I think he's been kind of tenured there at, you know, maybe not as tenured as like Tomlin or, you know, the Cincinnati coach, but Marvin Lewis. But I think I think he's pretty safe in Packers land.
You do think so? See, I think a lot of people expected with the healthy Aaron Rodgers, I think people expected the Packers to be in the playoff race. I know they're only one game out. I mean, the Bears lead the division. The Lions are actually still in the picture as well. The Packers are still hanging around, but I don't like what I'm seeing right now, to be honest with you. And they've got the Patriots this week. I mean, I know that the Packers can win the game easily, but the Patriots on a roll right now. If the Packers lose to the Patriots, they're going to be, what, 3-4-1? Look, if McCarthy misses the playoffs, I mean, it's one thing missing the playoffs without Aaron Rodgers, without a healthy Aaron Rodgers, but it's another thing. I mean, the guy is still in his prime. He might be he is one of the best quarterbacks in the game. And if you miss the playoffs, I mean, there's not that loyalty anymore with Mike McCarthy, because, like I said, the front office with the Packers it has changed quite a bit in the past year. So they might be looking elsewhere. I think he would be the top candidate. I'm just exploring out there. If Mike McCarthy and John Harbaugh aren't let go, I'm with you. I'm Vic Fangio. And I would also look really hard at Jim Schwartz, because I think he's a better head coach than what he showed with the Detroit Lions first time around. All right, let's move on to let's talk about the trades that occurred out there just in general. It was a busy Tuesday, Ed. I certainly didn't expect it. I know that trades are becoming more common in the NFL, but I certainly didn't expect this action. So let's talk about what the Packers did. The Packers shipped Ty Montgomery for what, a seventh round pick in 2020. I realize that he's a free agent, you know, next season, after the season. Obviously, you know, after he cost them the game when he fumbled that kick return, you know, he definitely didn't do himself any favors. The Ravens add another playmaker at running back with the running back situation being what it is right now. I think they're adding another playmaker to the backfield with Alex Collins. Is Ty Montgomery gonna help the Ravens a little bit?
You know, I think he's 1-2 with Alex Collins. You know, this trade makes more sense to me than the other one. You know, they only give up a seventh round pick on one hand, and then Ty Montgomery comes in. He's probably your number one or two running back. You know, this is a position that the Ravens need.
Well, I got you. I mean, it could help, but he's going to help more as a returner in this case if he doesn't cough up the ball, right? I mean, I think Ty Montgomery is gonna be help out there in the kick return game. Maybe he'll get a chance in the punt return game. He's gonna be kind of that third down back. I mean, obviously he was a former wide receiver at Stanford before he switched the running back position. Let's talk about the total heist that the Washington Redskins got. They needed a safety to pair with DJ Swearinger. And they get one, and ha-ha, Clinton Dix. Here's a player who has started 65 games for Green Bay. And all Washington gave up for a former first-round pick was a fourth-round pick in next year's draft. This is a total heist.
Yeah, you know, I kind of put out on Twitter, I was like, what were the Packers thinking? You know, you give up basically... I think HaHa Clinton Dix is a Pro Bowl quality free safety.
Well, he had a bad year last year. He was a Pro Bowler in 2016. He had a bad year in 2017, but he has bounced back this year. He's been playing some really good football. I mean, he's one of the better defensive players on the team, and I would say one of the better safeties in the league, period.
Yeah, and so... I mean, for the Redskins to pick him up, I mean, hopefully they can sign him long term. I think this is a steal for the Redskins. They only give up a fourth round pick. But, I mean, I did kind of put on Twitter, I said, you know, what were the Packers thinking? And the counter argument that I got was
He's a free agent.
Yeah, he's a free agent, and, you know, they're not willing to pay him, and, you know, might as well get a pick for him. But I mean, if you're gonna get rid of a talent like HaHa Clinton Dix, I want to get more than a fourth round pick.
I agree. I mean, he's a former first round pick that you got at the end of the first round. You get a fourth rounder for him. There's something else brewing here. I realized that HaHa Clinton Dix wasn't going to sign with the Packers. I don't think he was their priority. And we know that the Packers are not willing to pay safeties. I mean, Morgan Burnett, he left. Now the same thing happens. I guess they didn't want to see the same thing happen with HaHa Clinton Dix, so they traded him. But you got to get something better. You got to get better value here. Dante Fowler gets traded to the Los Angeles Rams for next year's third-round pick and a fifth-round pick in 2020. Can Fowler kickstart his career? I mean, he's been a disappointment with the Jaguars. I mean, can he get it going on a talented Los Angeles Rams defensive line?
Well, you know, the edge position, you know, the edge outside linebacker position in the Rams system is a weakness. And I almost think he's kind of just more of an average player, and they've just kind of accepted that he's more of an average player at this point in his career. Obviously, there's some upside. You know, he was the number three overall pick before he tore his ACL.
He's had some off the field issues. Some players have obviously been in front of him out there. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive line is very talented, and Fowler, he just hasn't been the same ever since he tore that ACL. But look, the Rams are already ranked first in the NFL in pass rush win rate. So I would say Dante Fowler can only help that. Even if he is, you know, an average player, even if he's a situational pass rusher, which I'm sure that's what he's going to become, but he's still going to help the Los Angeles Rams because they're not going to expect for him to be the star of that defense. That's Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh. So I actually think this is a good thing. A change of scenery for Dante Fowler would do some good. I'm not saying he's going to turn into a superstar, but I think the Rams have aspirations of winning a Super Bowl, and adding a player like this that could help on third downs, at first, I thought it was a win for the Jacksonville Jaguars because they got a third and a fifth round pick for a player who has been a major disappointment. But I think the Rams are adding a pretty good piece here. Not the difference maker, but I think this guy is going to help.
Yeah, I think he becomes your best edge rusher. And so that's where the pick makes sense. I don't know. I mean, they gave up a third and a fifth round pick. I mean, that seems like a very even trade, honestly.
All right, I'm sure you like the Golden Tate trade to the Philadelphia Eagles, right? The Lions, it's kind of an interesting move for the Lions. Look, they're not far out. I mean, they're in last place right now in the NFC North, but they're not too far out from first place. But it seems like the Lions, you know, they added Harrison from the Giants to their defensive line, but they get rid of their best pass catcher. I mean, I guess it says a lot that Kenny Galladay has become more of a playmaker in that offense, but Golden Tate is a solid get. I mean, 44 catches, 3 touchdowns in Detroit this season. Again, he's going to be a free agent in 2019, but this is a good rental for the Eagles for a third-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles don't really have a clear number one. Golden Tate might be their number one. Maybe it's Alshon Jeffrey. Maybe it's just, you know, they just have two starters on the outside, and, you know, whoever wins the ball that week wins the ball that week. But I don't think Golden Tate is, you know, going to change the Eagles that much.
He's just going to give them another weapon for Carson Wentz. I mean, they have Nelson Agholor. They've got Alshon Jeffrey. Golden Tate comes in. Look, he's not a savior by any means. He's never been the number one wide receiver, but he's definitely going to help. I mean, the Eagles want to throw the football around. Their running game, it's just not working right now with Corey Clement, Wendell Smallwood. Hopefully they get a couple of players back. Maybe Sproles is going to help when he comes back from injury, but it's evident to me. I mean, Peterson wants to throw it all over the field, and they need more weapons in the passing game. I mean, this offense is becoming more dangerous with Zach Ertz and Jeffrey and Tate and Agholor. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they only gave up a third round pick, but I don't see this as being as a really big trade. I mean, I almost compare it to like what he could be, like a Jay Ajayi, you know, when the Eagles traded the deadline for Jay Ajayi. You know, Jay Ajayi was, you know, he ended up being a solid contributor to their offense, but he wasn't the reason that they won.
No, absolutely not. But he gave him more of a running game, and I guess I like the Tate trade a little bit more than you. I think Tate is going to be a big contributor for this offense. I mean, he's always been a solid number two guy that's able to put up good numbers out here. I think he's going to do well in the system, even if it's only for a little bit. I don't think he's going to resign with the Eagles, but I think he's going to help them. And I'm a believer that the Eagles are going to be able to make a run again in the NFC. Demaryius Thomas, the Texans trade for Demaryius Thomas with Will Fuller going down for the entire season. Now you've got DeAndre Hopkins and Demaryius Thomas. They gave up a fourth and a seventh round pick to the Broncos. What do you think of that deal?
I think it's a good trade for the Texans. The Texans are right in the thick of things, and, you know, I mean, if they can improve their offense, that'd be good. DeAndre Hopkins is definitely a clear bona fide number one. Demaryius Thomas at this point in his career is a number two. I like the trade. You know, they really only give up a fourth round pick. They swap seventh round picks, but you know, the Broncos, I mean, this isn't a stupid trade on the Broncos side either. I mean,
They've got Cortland Sutton waiting in the wings.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Sanders, I think at this point in his career, he can still be a number one. I think he could still be a number one. So I don't think necessarily that the Broncos are really in a fire sale. I think they're still in the thick of things in the AFC West.
They're done, Ed. They're done. I mean, with the Chiefs and the Chargers, the Broncos are clearly better than the Raiders, but there's no way they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, Case Keenum has 10 picks, and I think I've heard something from John Elway where he doesn't have a problem with that. He thinks Case Keenum has played well. I don't get it. Maybe he's played better than what they had last year. But in all honesty, I mean, Case Keenum has been a big disappointment. I don't think the Broncos are going anywhere this year. I love their defense. Bradley Chubb has become a consistent pass rusher opposite of Von Miller. You were right about him, Ed. I mean, he looks like he's turning into that player that they got at number five. But Case Keenum has been a huge disappointment, and I think they're the Broncos are basically admitting that right now with the trade of Demaryius Thomas.
I mean, at this point, if you're the Broncos, I don't think you're in a fire sale. I think you're saying we're going to play for the number six seed and see if that can happen.
Yeah, I just, like I said, it's been a disappointing season. I'm sure John Elway and the Broncos felt like they were going to compete for the AFC West title, but certainly hasn't worked out. I mean, the Chiefs have been red hot. The Chargers have played better here in the last two or three weeks, and the Broncos aren't going anywhere. Let's talk about Jameis Winston with the Bucs. I want to pose this question, Ed. Is he done in Tampa? Is this it? Is this the end for the number one overall pick?
You know, they never seem to really cut ties with him, but I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick deserves to be the quarterback in Tampa Bay, and I understand that, you know, the last couple games that he started, he wasn't as effective as the first three, and you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick will go back to being, you know, who he was, but I still think he's the better guy. I mean,
he was the better guy when the Bucs inserted him into the starting lineup when they benched Winston. I mean, Fitzpatrick almost brought him back. If it wasn't for that field goal, they would have gone into overtime. That was pretty amazing. I mean, the offense looked clearly different. I mean, when Fitzpatrick was in there, he knew what he was doing on every throw, and he wasn't making those mistakes that Winston was making the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it that Fitzpatrick is should be the guy at least the rest of the year, and hopefully see what they have, and maybe they do sneak into the playoffs this year.
What do you think long term? Let me give you the numbers here. Jameis is tied for the league lead. He's tied for the league lead in interceptions, even though he missed the first three games of the season because of the suspension. He has 10 picks. Fitzpatrick has, you know, half that, and he also has half of his touchdowns. Fitzpatrick threw for 13 touchdowns. Jameis has 6. Winston was inserted into the starting lineup in favor of Fitzpatrick. Now they're going back to Fitzpatrick. That's never a good thing. I mean, when the Bucs turn to the journeyman once again, because we all know that Fitzpatrick isn't going to be here next year. My question is, do you think Winston is done in Tampa in general? Do you think they're going to cut ties with him in the offseason, absorb the cap hit? Because I don't think anybody's trading for him. Are the Bucs going to be on the market for a quarterback next year? Or do you think the smart thing would be to bring in a younger quarterback, whether it's through the draft or free agency, and have him compete with Winston next year?
Oh, I mean, Winston being the quarterback in Tampa Bay, I mean, that should be done. I mean, with all the off-the-field issues that he had, I mean, it's just, you know, off-the-field issues. I mean, he really hasn't developed into – he isn't the kind of quarterback that's going to take you to the Super Bowl. I mean, I think it would be smart to cut ties with him, you know, cut that contract and – I want to see what you can do with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And, you know, if he can, you know, bring you into the playoffs, maybe you stick with him, and you know, you wait and see if a good quarterback prospect comes around. Maybe you wait a year until a better quarterback class comes around. But I'm kind of on the Fitzpatrick train still.
All right. I'll actually make the case for Winston a little bit. Look, if it wasn't for the off-the-field issues that he's had at Florida State, or he had them obviously with the Bucs in 2016, he had that incident, which he was suspended for to begin the season. But on the field, Winston, I mean, besides this season, he has been a good player. I mean, his completion percentage has improved every year. He threw for over 4,000 yards in his first two seasons. He would have thrown for 4,000 yards last year if it wasn't for missing a few games to injury. He did cut down his interceptions last year. It's just this year has been bad. I mean, this has been a brutal month for Winston. But to be honest with you, if the Bucs cut ties with him, I think Winston could be a successful successful starting quarterback elsewhere. I just think this relationship has to end. I think it's going to be better for the Bucs, and I think it's going to be better for Winston.
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm an NFL team, though, I'd be wary of signing a guy like Winston. I mean, if he's your last option, maybe you bring him in for a year, but.
Off-the-field stuff scares you, right? You just don't know what he's going to do in the offseason, right?
Yeah, and it just – you can't rely on him. And I mean, he does have some talent, but
– He's a very talented guy.
I don't think the on-the-field stuff justifies the off-the-field stuff.
I got you. You would want a choir boy. You want a guy like Jared Goff. You want a guy like Carson Wentz. You want a guy like Tom Brady. Fair enough. I mean, I agree with you. Quarterback is the most important position on the football team. And you've got to have a guy that you're going to be comfortable with for the entire regular season and the playoffs. You just don't know what you're going to get with Winston. He might have some incidents off the field, but he's a very talented guy on the field. I mean, he had those interceptions at Florida State. They haunted him at... You know, with Tampa, but we've seen quarterbacks like this succeed. We've seen it with Eli. We've seen it with Matthew Stafford. Guys that will take chances. Guys that where the interceptions totals were pretty high in some years, but those guys have made it work. I feel that in the right situation, Winston can make it work if he keeps his nose clean. All right, we'll see where the Bucks go with this. Obviously, they invested a lot in Winston, and to be honest with you, I would cut ties with Winston. I think this is a relationship that's going nowhere right now. All right, let's move on to college football. The rankings, Ed. The first college football rankings were released. Alabama at number one, Clemson number two, LSU at number three, and not surprising because... You know, they've beaten so many top 25 teams. I mean, they've had a great run there in the top SEC conference. Notre Dame at number four. Obviously, I mean, everybody is in agreement with the top four, right? I mean, you can't argue with this.
Yeah, I don't argue with the top four. I do think, though, with the tough games that LSU has to play, I think they have a lot to play for this weekend against Alabama, but I kind of see actually Ohio State being the fourth team, and here's why.
Okay.
I think this is the right rankings for right now, but I do think that at the end of the season, I think the fourth team will be Ohio State, and this is how I think of it. I think they're going to want to have a Big Ten team because I think they're the second best conference. And I just think that last Michigan versus Ohio State game, you know, Ohio State runs the table the rest of the way. They play the Michigan-Ohio State game, you know, in Columbus. I see Ohio State winning the Big Ten, and I think they get the fourth spot.
All right. Obviously, Michigan is knocking on the door. They're at number five, but they do have Ohio State to end the season. Are you not a believer in Oklahoma? I mean, they've got Oklahoma State, they've got Kansas, they've got a really good West Virginia team in the end. They also play them on that final weekend. And then I'm sure they're going to get somebody like Texas in the Big 12 championship game. Do you think Oklahoma or Georgia might be more of a team that gets into the top four ahead of Ohio State? I get it. I get that the Buckeyes will play Michigan, but I see Oklahoma playing against West Virginia, who's number 13, and then they're going to get Texas. And, I mean, Texas is still going to be in the top 15 when that showdown will happen. I'm sure it will happen in the Big 12 championship game. I think that, Oklahoma could surprise a lot of people, and right now they're higher in the rankings than the Buckeyes.
I think the problem with Oklahoma is they just haven't had as difficult a schedule as these SEC teams and Big Ten teams. And
But they're the next team. If we assume that Michigan wins out until the Ohio State game, let's just speculate, right? Michigan is probably going to be in the top four after LSU loses to Alabama. Well, I mean, we're just assuming that, right? Michigan gets into the top four. Ohio State keeps winning until the final showdown. Say Ohio State beats Michigan. Obviously, they're going to be thought very highly. But we still got Oklahoma. We still got Georgia ahead of them. And obviously, Georgia is, I'm sure, is going to get Alabama in the SEC championship game. And a lot of it is going to depend on that. But Oklahoma has an easier road. And like I said, West Virginia at the end, then I'm sure they're going to get Texas. You believe that Ohio State will jump over Oklahoma, even if both teams went out the rest of the way, correct?
I think that...
Just want to sort this out, your position, I mean, on this thing. You think that the Big Ten team will be in there ahead of the Big 12 team?
Yeah, I honestly think that a one-loss... Big Ten team should get in over a one-loss Big 12 team.
Fair enough. But that loss to Purdue that Ohio State has, I mean, that looks really, really bad. I mean, they lost big, and Purdue isn't even ranked. And, I mean, that loss is going to haunt Ohio State in the final rankings. That's the point that I'm trying to make here, that I think if they lost a close game by 3 points, by 7 points, it would have looked a lot different than what the loss actually is. I think that loss to Purdue is going to haunt them. Even Ohio State blows everyone out and wins against Michigan. I just think that loss is always going to look bad on their resume.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Ohio State had a bad loss against I think it was Iowa last year, and it was a fluke, but they still got into the college football playoff.
But it wasn't a blowout. I mean, they it's not like they were blown out against Purdue. They were blown out, and you know, Oklahoma has one loss against Texas team that only won by 3 points. It was a shootout. I want to remind our listeners, in the beginning of October, Texas won 48-45. It was a close game, and Texas is still in there, even though they obviously have taken a step back recently. They've lost a game and have kind of slid in those rankings, but that loss that Oklahoma has on their resume against Texas looks a lot better than what Ohio State has against Purdue. But just pointing out that fact, just want to get that record straight. I think that loss to Purdue is going to haunt the Buckeyes for a while. What I want to mention is Washington State is ranked in the top 10, and Kentucky, 7-1 in the top 10, sitting there at number 9. Look, I'm sure that's not how it's going to end up, but I got to take a screenshot of that on my iPhone. You know, it's just Kentucky in the top 10. We haven't had that in a long, long, long time. It's incredible, Ed. I don't think, you know, 8 games through the season right now. We've got 8 games, and I never thought I would be saying this. You know, it feels like basketball season, you know. It feels like the Wildcats are in the top 10, but this is a basketball team. But here they are, you know, the football program at number 9, and we should just all enjoy it. They've really played well. They've won some tough games there in the SEC. And it's just, I want to see how far they can go. I realize that they got Georgia this week, and that's going to be a tough one. They've got one at home, but, you know, they've got Tennessee, they've got Louisville. I think Kentucky, I mean, legitimately, Kentucky can get to 10 wins here. What do you think about that?
I mean, as far as the college football playoff, I don't see Kentucky getting in, but
they're going to get it. They could get into a huge bowl. I mean, they've got Georgia this week, they've got Tennessee next week, then they've got Middle Tennessee, and then they're at Louisville, who's not having a good year. I see them losing against Georgia, but I think this is a 10-1 team, and that's crazy saying that. Kentucky is not going to be in the playoffs in that 4-team playoff, but I think they're going to get into a major bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, they've definitely been the surprise team of the year, the sort of Cinderella story of the year. You know, I think this will be good for Josh Allen's draft stock.
I mean, he's already having a nice season, and you know, Kentucky has had pretty good linebackers out there, edge rushers that have been drafted pretty high in recent years. I mean, Bud Dupree, they've had a couple of linebackers that inside linebackers that have had success in the NFL. Wesley Woodyard, Avery Williamson, they've done well for themselves. I think Josh Allen should be a first-round pick based on how he's improved and how he's played. All right, let's talk about the big game, Ed. Alabama against LSU. Obviously, I mean, LSU has surprised everyone, especially me. I mean, I said that Ed Orgeron is going to get fired midway through the season. He's not only going to get, you know, keep his job, but he's going to sign a huge extension after this season. LSU obviously has a chance. Can they win this game against Alabama?
Here's the thing.
What needs to happen? What needs to happen for LSU to pull out this win? And by the way, I want to remind our folks, they're playing at home. This is a home game in Baton Rouge. It's not like they're playing in Alabama out there. So that gives them a little bit of a chance already, just being in that home environment.
So I obviously think Alabama's going to win this game. But, you know, when you talk about the spread and the fact that Alabama's favored by two touchdowns, I mean, I'm going to take the points. Mm-hmm. You know, you're playing it in Baton Rouge, as you said. You know, I think LSU has more to play for in this game. You know, I think if Alabama could lose this game and still make the college football playoff, I feel like if LSU loses this game, they have two losses, and that just kind of really hurts their chances of ever really being back in the college football playoff. So LSU has more to play for. But yeah, when you look at the matchup, you know, when you match positions, you know, LSU may have the better defensive backs, but I'll take Alabama's offense, I'll take Alabama's offensive line, I'll take off Alabama's defensive line. So yeah, Alabama's the better team, but I don't think that Alabama's going to roll over LSU.
I don't think they will, based on how LSU has played. I just don't think LSU has enough on offense. All right, that leads me to my next question. Is this Alabama's best team under Nick Saban when you look across the board, when you compare it to the other championship teams, last year's team? You know, we could go back a couple of years from now. I mean, is this the best Nick Saban's team at Alabama that he's had?
I've never seen a team dominate like Bama has this year. No one in the hardest conference in college football has come close to them. They have stars at every position, pretty much. They've rolled over all these teams. They're embarrassing SEC teams. That's right. That's the thing, is like they're not just winning. So, yeah, I do think this is the most dominant Bama team ever.
See, I'm not ready to go there. I would say that this is the best offensive team that Nick Saban has had at Alabama when we're looking at the offense in general. The points that they're scoring and just how they're definitely just erasing their opponents. I mean, this is still the SEC, the toughest conference out there. But I'm not ready to say that this is the best defense that Nick Saban has had. He's had really good defensive teams, and this team is still young defensively. So offensively, yes, even when you compare it with the A.J. McCarron's offense that they had previously, you know, when they had, you know, Calvin Ridley and all the boys out there that they've rolled out, Derrick Henry's, but I'm not going to concede that this is the best defensive team, because I think on defense they've scored so many points on offense that this team hasn't been in a close game, and I want to see the defense step up. They haven't been asked to do that yet. And I want to see that. I think this is a young team defensively, and I think they could be vulnerable on that side of the field. And I think once they get up against Georgia or Clemson, you know, the game might turn out, it might be a different score out there, because Obviously, those teams are really dominant as well. So I'm not ready to say that this is the most dominant team, but definitely the most dominant offense that I've seen at Alabama through all the years. Let's talk about some other games. We've got Georgia against Kentucky, West Virginia against Texas, and we've got Michigan against Penn State. Who do you think, out of those three games, who is the top seed that's most vulnerable to lose this weekend? Is it Michigan? Is it West Virginia? Or is it Georgia?
You know, I could really see Penn State beating Michigan. I know that Penn State has two losses this year, but you know, I think there's a certain hunger. You know, they won a tough game against Iowa last week. You know, I think Michigan is vulnerable in this game. Would I pick Michigan? Yeah, but I think Penn State has a chance to upset them.
I'm with you on this. I think Michigan is the most vulnerable team out of those teams in the top 10. All right, let's move on to our favorite part of the show. Let's talk about when we put players under the microscope, when we do scouting reports on players that most of our listeners haven't seen much of. You know, these guys are going to be household names, you know, in February and March, but right now it's still early. It's the end of October, and you know, you're just hearing about these players. Let's start with the tight end, Noah Fant. You and I talked about him a little bit when we mentioned the tight end preview. Noah Fant was in the spotlight then. Let's turn our spotlight on him. Has Noah Fant gained your respect this year? Because you were a little bit hard on him. You said that you didn't feel like he deserved the hype that he was getting from some draft experts out there.
You know, I had only watched one game, and I really hadn't gotten to see just how good of a receiver he is.
Okay.
So I'm kind of singing a different tune now.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk about Noah Fant there. What do you like about him? Give me a few things that really jump out at you.
Well, I think he's got this two sides to him where he is that sort of move tight end, right? Like he could be that sort of Evan Engram, you know, real fast, you know, real tall, you know, tight end. The other side of it, and I think he's a pretty decent route runner for a tight end. The other thing I like about him is that I think he could be. I'm actually kind of impressed with him as an inline blocker. You know, maybe he's not like a George Kittle, but he's more of an inline blocker than I thought he would be.
He plays at Iowa, and I mean, if you want to play tight end there, you have to be able to block a little bit. It's Kirk Ferentz coaching. I mean, it's in the bloodlines out there. If Noah Fant can't block, he wouldn't have played at Iowa. He would be sitting on the bench. It doesn't matter how talented of a receiver he would have been. So if you play at Iowa, if you're a wide receiver or a tight end, you're going to be able to block. You're going to try your hardest in that area because if you don't, you're not going to get on the field.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few little things that I'm a little concerned about. I think one is I kind of see him as kind of a drops guy. Not a heavy drops guy, but just a guy who, you know, who could struggle with drops. You know, that could play into the game. The other thing is I think as a blocker, he needs to get lower. He's got such a tall and upright frame. And I think as an inline tight end, he's really going to have to get lower and get his body lower, to sort of be a more competitive blocker at the next level.
Fair enough. I mean, I think he's not 6'5". I think at the scouting combine, he's going to measure closer to 6'4". I think he's about 6'4.5". And some teams are going to have an issue with that because, I mean, O.J. Howard from Alabama went in the first round. He's, what, 6'6", 260, and a freak who runs like a 4.55, 4.6. Noah Fant is going to run that fast. I mean, he is – I've said this before. He's an athlete. He's a former basketball player. He's a track guy. He's fast. He's athletic. He's a great leaper. And you see that on film. You see those flashes a little bit. He plays in a pro-style offense. I love the way he tracks the ball, especially on those downfield throws. He can beat a linebacker. He can beat a safety. And he's going to be able to do that at the NFL level as well when he has more freedom. Sometimes the Iowa offense kind of holds him back, to be honest with you, because if he played in a more wide open offense, I think he would get like, 8 to 10 catches a game. He's not getting that right now. He's a really good red zone option because of his catching radius. I like the fact that he kind of expands that. I already said that he kind of jumps out of the gym. He can get the ball at the highest point. So he's not a perfect prospect, but what I am saying is I think he's got upside. He's a young guy. He's not a finished product yet, and that's why he deserves. He's going to be the top tight end in this draft, and he deserves the attention that he's getting. He is a top 20 pick. Like I said, he's going to test really well at the combine. He's going to do well at the pro day. Teams are going to fall in love with him. He comes from the Iowa program. He's a good kid. He's got good football IQ. And he comes across as a good young man. And that's why I think that, like I said, the sky is the limit. The only thing that's going to hold him back is that he's not ideal size. I mean, he's going to get up to 250, 255 through his training. I don't think he's going to lose speed, but he's not going to be 6'5". He's going to be closer to 6'4". It's going to be a little bit of a problem for some teams. Although, like I said, we saw Evan Engram being drafted with that 23rd overall pick by the New York Giants because they loved his speed, they loved his athleticism, and his receiving ability. So I think Noah Fant, yeah, he's definitely going to be in the conversation. I see him as a top 20 pick.
I think 20 is where he goes. I see him as better than Hayden Hurst for sure. But the teams just don't draft tight ends early. I mean, even that year when we had Evan Engram, David Njoku, and O.J. Howard, those guys weren't. I mean, I think O.J. Howard didn't go till like 18.
19th. I think he went 19th. Engram went 23rd, and then we got Njoku at the end of the first round. But we've seen some tight ends go high. We've seen that before. I mean, with Kellen Winslow, Vernon Davis. When you've got special talent, if you're a really good athlete and you can run really fast, if you're a mismatch, you're going to go in the top 10, like we saw with Vernon Davis and Kellen Winslow in the past. It's been a while. But like I said, if you're a special talent, teams will take a tight end high because he's going to be a mismatch in the middle of the field up the seam.
Yeah.
All right, let's do DeAndre Baker. So we're doing a tight end, and we're going with the talented corner from Georgia. I was actually surprised that Baker came back for his senior season. I thought that after Georgia had that run last year, obviously they advanced to the championship game. I thought that he was gonna leave because he was legitimately, to me, a guy that was gonna get drafted between 20 and 32. He was a first round pick, maybe not top 10, top 15 pick, but at the end of the first round, I thought that he was a really good pick. And Baker decided to come back for his senior season, and here he is. I mean, just continuing to show his ball skills and patience as a cover man. What do you think of DeAndre?
You know, I love him as a man cover corner. I think he's really good at staying in phase, staying with the receiver, being a man cover corner. I think he has good ball skills. But the weakness I see in his game is that he's just not physical as a zone cover. And I don't think he quite has the instincts as a zone cover, and he kind of becomes a role player, well, not a role player, but a specialized player, in that his job is to basically cover the receiver, shut down their receiver, and I think that would be what he'll be asked to do in the NFL. The problem with it is that I think a team will be able to do a lot of pick plays, because they know that man coverage is coming. And I think that could be a weakness for him.
But, I mean, Georgia plays so much press coverage. I mean, we see Baker in press coverage a lot. I don't think we have the film to back up that he struggles in off-man or zone coverage. Obviously, his strength is press man coverage because that's what he knows best. That's what their defense plays. But I just don't think we know enough, and I don't think we would know enough until he gets to NFL camp when they would ask him to play different coverage. But he can't play different coverages. I think he's patient. I think he has good ball skills. I question his size a little bit because I think he's going to be closer to 5'10", and he's going to be about 185, 190 pounds. And I question whether he's the athlete that Greedy Williams is. He's not that athlete. And I also question his speed because I think he's going to be in the low 4.5s. I don't think he's a low 4.4 guy based on what I'm seeing on film. He can certainly recover, but I don't see that impressive closing speed. I see him being coached really well. I think he has really good technique. I think he will stick his nose in there as a run defender. Obviously, there are times that he will miss those tackles, but he can play the run. Like I said, ball skills. But my question mark is he's not a top athlete, and he's more of an undersized corner. I mean, 5'10", 185, you're still undersized. I mean, you would want those guys to be closer to 6 feet. So, but he does break up passes when they throw to him. He makes plays on the ball, and I like that. But I think he's somewhere – he's a late first-round pick. He's definitely not a top 10, a top 15 pick. But he's been well-coached, and I think in the right system, he could be like a Tre'Davious White type of player.
See, I think his coverage skills are so good that I think he could be a mid-first-rounder. I just think, like, a team will want him because the man coverage is just so important in today's NFL.
I don't argue with that, but when he will fall short a little bit of those testing numbers, teams, I think, might question that. They will put a question mark right next to him. He's a good athlete, but he's not a great athlete. And he doesn't have that intimidating size. I mean, teams do like their corners to be closer to 6 feet, 6'1", in today's NFL. And I don't think he doesn't have blazing speed, but his technique, his coverage skills, his press man ability, his ball skills, they're really, really good. And that might win out, I mean, with some teams. Look, we saw Joe Hayden run a 4.6. He was still drafted in the top 10, right? So, you know, out of Florida when he was drafted in the top 10 by the Cleveland Browns. We know that he's been a really good corner because he had good technique coming out and stuff like that. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. I see a corner that will slip somewhere in the 20s. But it all depends, like, who will come out, who will be his top competition out there. Do you put him as the number two corner right now, assuming all the underclassmen come out? Do you put him behind Greedy Williams?
Yeah, I think he's definitely behind Greedy Williams, but he's the number two at this point for me.
I gotcha. All right. Well, like I said, we talked about two prospects, Noah Fant and DeAndre Baker, that we feel really good about. We believe that they're going to be first-round picks, and we like their game, and it just – I'm sure we'll see Baker at the Senior Bowl. I really think that we'll see his special skills on display during that week in Mobile. So watch out for DeAndre Baker and Noah Fant once we get closer to the draft. Obviously, we really had a good time scouting with them. I'm Alex Kavtoff for my co-host and partner, Ed Hunt. This was Blitzcast number 34, and we'll be back next week to talk about some new stuff. Thanks for listening.